Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Sync Exchange podcast. I'm here with Paul Greco from J. Walter Thompson. Paul, how are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you very much. So why don't we begin from the beginning? Introduce yourself and what you do here.
Okay. I am the director of music and radio production and supervision here at J. Walter Thompson. And what I'm in charge of is overseeing and producing original music for ads, as well as licensing and music supervision for all of our clients. We have a group here of three, and we work on every client that J. Walter Thompson New York has, and also some within the network around North America and even the globe on certain occasions. So we have a pretty wide net.
I would think you would, because the thing is that, you know, traditionally outside of the U.S., and you correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not really a music supervision function or a music production function per se outside of maybe the European and U.S. markets. So I would imagine when you're talking about Asia or other areas, they might loop you guys in.
There have been times, you know, they're, you know, they operate differently, you know,
right.
Their business modes of operations are different than the way we do things here. So a lot of times we will we'll be more assisting them in the sourcing of the music.
Sure.
And then, you know, they'll pick up the business end because of, you know, whatever trade laws or whatever might, you know, international laws of commerce are, whatever that might be. But a lot of times we'll help them in finding the music, and then they pick up the business end on their side. So
it's more of helping from a sort of creative point of view.
Yes.
Than it is a sort of a clearance and,
yes,
you know.
Clearances in North America, we handle.
Right.
And we even do some in Europe as well.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes out of those zones, we're more about the sourcing of the music.
Cool. So I'm going to get back to the job at JWT in a minute. Tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got into the world of advertising and music.
I started out as a recording engineer. After college, I started to work in various recording studios in New York. A music recording studio that focused on advertising, a voiceover recording studio, and a audio post-production. So between those three, I got a pretty good knowledge of audio engineering and recording for commercials. All three of those studios were primarily commercial audio studios. So
right.
Did that for several years, and then got my first job in an agency at BBDO New York as a music and radio producer.
Right.
And was there for a few years before I went to Young & Rubicam. And I was there for 14 years. And I did a short stint on the music publishing side at Spirit Music Group here in New York.
Sure.
And then came over to J. Walter Thompson to head the music department here. So it's been a good road.
Where do you find the most sort of interesting challenges? On the side where you've been in agency or outside agency? Or is it challenging on both sides?
It's certainly challenging on both sides. I think, you know, for me, the challenge on the publishing side was that I've sort of come up on the production side. I'm used to making things, whereas on the publishing side, it's a little, you know, it's more of a, you know, fitting what's already made into a piece of communication. It was a transition for me that was outside of what I've been used to, but I got an amazing amount of knowledge during that time about how publishing works. And I've been able to take that knowledge and use that daily in what I do now. So it was a great learning experience. I'm glad I did it, but I feel more at home on the production side of things.
But still, on the agency side, it's essential because, you know, when you're dealing with something and somebody wants to clear an existing track or they want to do a deal with a publisher, you already have that knowledge sort of baked in, and it's not like you've got a learning curve with these guys, which is so important.
Oh, yeah, it definitely helps. It was, like I said, it was a very worthwhile experience, and it just adds to my knowledge base, you know, being here.
Now, let's go back to JWT. Just as a very basic question, how does it split in general between original versus licensed music? Like, how does that work within the agency?
Well, it fluctuates year to year. I would say, since I've been here, which is 5 years, it's probably 60% original music production, 40% licensing. 1 year, you know, there may be a little bit of a swing year to year, one way or the other, but I would say overall it's about 60-40. And we license everything from stock music to big songs to indie bands, unknown artists, you know, haven't been signed yet. There's a wide array of types of music that we license.
It's really in terms of whatever type of music it is, licensed or original, it's really about having the right tool for the job.
Absolutely.
And the budget.
Absolutely, yes. Sometimes the budget dictates what avenue we go down. You know, it could be just a creative decision, just outright. Every job is unique. Every decision is unique depending on what project is.
How often is the music department brought in before the copy and the storyboards are being made? And how often do they come to you and say, oh gosh, we need a music bed that's going to work. We've got this idea in our heads. Help us.
Well, I'm happy to say that here, music is a very big component in a lot of the work we do. Our creative department is very music focused. They very much consider music early on in what they're doing.
That's great.
I really feel fortunate that I very rarely get the 11th hour music call. Like, oh my God, we didn't think about music until now, and we're shipping in 3 days. We're brought in early, very early in the process. It may not be before storyboards, but it's certainly very soon after.
Right.
So we're in very early in the process. And we're kept informed through the process, and we're allowed to contribute to a lot of the ideas going forward early on. So that helps us, and that helps what we, you know, what we ultimately end up, whether it's finding the perfect song or, you know, pre-recorded music or creating something. We have a head start, and that only helps on so many levels.
Of course. And I think the thing is, and you can tell me from your insights, that brands and creatives are really understanding the value of music
more and
in
more,
terms
yes.
of mm-hmm. how it can be impactful, and it can really inspire the consumer and lift the messaging to another level in terms of engagement and interaction.
Absolutely. Yeah. I consider music to be the great connector of people and brands, because music is something that everyone relates to. Whatever type of music you like, it can be used really effectively by brands to reach specific consumers, specific consumer groups. So if a brand is smart about how they use music, then they can really get a lot of bang for their buck, depending on even whatever strategy they want to use. But they really need to think about it and use it effectively, and it could be a huge payback for them.
100%. So give us an example of something that you feel really worked well that you guys worked on that activated a brand from the music being a part of that activation.
Well, I would have to say there've been a couple, but I think the one that I felt was really a big one for us. I wouldn't say it was a hugely high profile thing, but it was very effective in what it was used for. We, 3 years ago, launched an initiative by the government called Brand USA.
Right.
And Brand USA was an initiative that was supposed to spur tourism to the United States. So we were looking for music that was going to work with our creative, and basically was going to be a musical welcoming card, if you will, for people outside the United States to come in.
Right.
And to come and enjoy everything that's, all the great landmarks and beauty that this country have, you know, from coast to coast.
Right.
So we were looking for pre-recorded songs. We were looking for popular songs. And for one reason or another, we just couldn't find something that was dead on perfect. Lyrics weren't exactly right. Artist wasn't the right artist. It had to fit a profile of who we wanted to be the ambassador for, asking people to come and enjoy the country. So after doing some research and following up some leads, we actually got Roseanne Cash, Johnny Cash's daughter,
right,
who now recently had multiple Grammy-winning record, to write a song. She and her husband, John Leventhal, who's a Grammy-winning producer, wrote this song called Land of Dreams for us. It was a big hit. I mean, the clients loved it. It went out globally to all the markets that we were trying to press upon people to come over, and it was a huge hit. It's funny because not a lot of people in the United States ever saw it because it wasn't for us.
Right.
It's for people outside. And the reaction was fantastic, and it was perfect because Roseanne was the right artist. She has an amazing musical heritage, obviously.
Of course.
And she was the right personality to be the front person. She was actually in the ads as well.
Oh, wow.
So it was a very successful campaign, and it was very well reviewed, and the song was very well reviewed, and it was a big hit, you know, on the level that we needed it to be. So that was, I think, one of the more effective things that you know, I can point to at the moment of what music and an original piece even could, you know, because that's something now Brand USA could say is theirs. It's their amp for their brand. So
that's absolutely amazing. And also it's, you find a really good confluence there of several factors. Mm-hmm. Where you've got somebody who really does create music that's representative of America to people abroad in a way that you can say that hip hop, rock and roll, pop music does, but really Americana to a lot of people, and the things that a lot of tourists like outside of, you know, outside of going to New York or San Francisco is all about Americana.
Right.
So an artist like that with the heritage and the sound, I would think resonated really well. And I would imagine
it really did.
In terms of the markets, Europe, Asia, worldwide.
All that, It because what you may or may not know is Rosanna Cash has a really big following outside the U.S.
I have no idea.
Yes, she really does. So it was a bonus that Roseanne had that kind of, you know, notoriety outside the U.S. and in a lot of the markets that we were looking at. So it was just, it just worked out really well. And it was a really good song. It really was. So.
Wow. Well, I'm going to have to listen to it. I'll also put it in the annotations for the podcast when we put it out. So people can listen to it as well. Now I'm just, I'm like super intrigued.
That's fine.
But, you know, in terms of the original compositions that you work with, I mean, okay, you know, when you have the budget and it's something like the U.S. government or something like a major brand, yes, you bring in the Roseanne Cashs of the world. But, you know, do you have an in-house group of people or some go-to people that you work with as composers, producers for the various sort of more workaday?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we have. I mean, New York is full of talented composers and arrangers and music creators in general. We work with a lot of them here in New York. We work with a number of them in Los Angeles. You know, it's sort of we go to the places where we know where their strengths are and what we're trying to achieve. So,
of course,
you know, sometimes whether it's a song or whether it's an underscore, we have, you know, we know sort of who excels at what.
Right.
And we try to focus in on the people whose strengths are what we're looking for. So, I mean, there's so much talent. There's so much talent. I'm envious of a lot of these amazing songwriters and, you know, composers that do an amazing job.
It's like there's almost too much choice. And the thing is, I think that a lot of people, and this is something that I try to say to our audience, is that if you're somebody who makes or produces original music and you want to sort of move to the front row and get noticed, one of the best ways to do it is to really differentiate yourself. You know, think about what you're best at. You know, if you're somebody who's a singer-songwriter that plays folk music, and it's really good folk music, and I'm just bringing this up because I know somebody who does, you know, don't try and do hip-hop unless you're pairing, like, if you're Suzanne Vega comparing, then you're pairing up with an awesome producer of hip-hop, then maybe you've got something.
Right.
But don't try to do it on your own, and especially if you're looking to work in the sync world or looking to compose for media, you should really say, okay, this is my specialty, and just stick to it.
Yeah. I think everybody wants to be able to do everything.
Right.
Because they want to have a chance at having as much business as they can and
of course
serve every request that comes in. I think you have to feature your strengths.
Yeah.
You have to feature, and as you said, if you need help from the outside, there's a million great freelancers too in the city alone. You can always call in resources from the great freelance pool that we have here in New York. But you should really feature what you do best because you got to separate yourself from what everyone else is doing if you can.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
And then in terms of licensing, okay. Well, there's the obvious thing that, you know, if you have a budget and you have a direction, I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, the idea of temp love where, you know, a editor or creative or a brand manager gets it in their head that they want to have, you know, Dolly Parton's 9 to 5, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you're the one who has to go, no, you can't have that in the Monster.com commercial because she's not going to do it.
No.
There's not enough money and she just doesn't want to do it.
Right.
So you have to swap that out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you're not working with something where it's a clear choice like that, or it's somebody that wants to do something and you've got the money for it, how do you find the music? How do you source the music that you use on sort of a workaday basis when you are licensing?
Each of us in our department, first of all, we know who to call in terms of all the big labels and publishers. We just know.
Yeah.
And then we also have a good Rolodex of some of the, you know, the indie labels and various labels from, you know, around the globe. One of my producers has a great list of publishers that he's come in contact over the years. He also is able to aggregate a lot of stuff that he's found, that he sources, and keeps a great library.
Of course.
So sometimes it's I have the same, but sometimes it's a personal library that we've put together that we know that are go-to batches of things.
Right.
And then sometimes we have to go to all the places that we have that we know are resources.
Right.
So it's a combination. Sometimes we don't even have to make a phone call. We go dip into our iTunes and say, okay, this one will work. I know it's in your budget. Should be good. Take a listen. Tell me what you think. And then sometimes it's, you know, we're on the hunt.
Right.
And, you know, there's back and forth. There's a lot of playing a bunch of things, going back for round two, round three. And, you know, it can be a process. So sometimes we have the immediate answer, and sometimes we have to do some detective work and get it, you know, get the search on, make sure it's affordable, make sure that the artist will approve, all that. So, you know, everyone's different. Every situation is different.
I think that, you know, going back again to the audience, for the people that own music, you know, whether it's a label, a publisher, a management company, an artist, it doesn't really matter. I think that the thing is, again, specialization is really key. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're better off representing the best EDM or the best rock and roll or the best jazz or neoclassical, whatever it is, rather than saying, we're going to try to be a major and just have really good music across lots of genres, because it's a sort of a harder thing for a producer to say, okay, I'm going to go to these guys and see what they pop out. Mm-hmm. It's more like, okay, I know these guys have amazing EDM. Yeah. I need EDM for an upbeat bed, and let's see what they have in the budget.
Yeah,
that's really more the thought process, right?
I think that helps. That's, I mean, if you can differentiate yourself by specializing in something, well, it certainly helps us, because then we know where we're going for what we need.
Right.
But if it's scattered around, it could be a needle in a haystack thing too. So that's, you know, I think you're going to stand out more if you are specializing in something.
And it's not just specialization. That's like one part of it. Another part of it is being able to give an array of choices in terms of pricing as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Because there's going to be some things where, honestly, something's going to come through and it's going to be $800. And you're going to need to have something that is pre-cleared for $800, or it's an easy clear for $800, versus what probably happens just as often, you're going to have a $25,000 one. There's going to be different criteria. They're not going to be the same thing generally.
That's right.
You know, so you've got to sort of get it in your head and prepare, like, okay, I've got these tracks over here, really high quality stuff. I've got this stuff over here. It's good, but it's kind of replaceable.
Yeah. You try to offer a range as best as you can. You
know? Right.
But
so then, talking about these two sort of areas, original and licensed music, one of the things I think for the audience is that I always say to the audience that their job is to make the job of the producer or the music supervisor easier. Mm-hmm. I think that everything sort of falls into place from that. Mm-hmm. And that's a very unsubjective way of looking at music. People are not used to that. Mm-hmm. But in this game, that's really the way it should work.
Right.
You know, so when you are positioning yourself to be the right tool for the job, that's number one. That I think is a number one priority after, like, having decent music.
Right.
You know.
Yes. Yeah, you have to have good quality stuff. You know, we're operating at a very high level here. Most agencies are. It's got to be a well-crafted piece of music. It's got to sound good sonically. It can't just be a great tune and sound unprofessional in the recording quality and the mixing quality.
Yeah.
It's got to be air ready. It really does. Cuz a few times that up and coming people have sent me tracks that I've listened to and said, "Please take a listen if you want to, you know, if you would consider, like, you know, for any license," and I'd listen to it and I'd say, "You know what, the music seems like with some development it could be really good, but it's just so poorly recorded and mixed that I could never use it in the state that I've gotten it." So I had to send, you know, notes back and say, "You really gotta make this sound way better than it does," you know, because you just can't. I couldn't even offer it up to my creatives because they'll judge it at, you know, I'll judge it in various categories, you know, based on, is it a well-crafted tune? Does it sound good? And so on and so on. They listen to it as a whole piece and, just, and they'll just say, not going to work.
Can't work with that.
And
it's one of these things where I think it's like, it's kind of simple, but you know, make sure you've mixed it down and mastered it.
Yes.
Before you bring it out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a key, you know?
And I tell people, you know, have an instrumental.
Oh, always.
If it's a song, have an instrumental version. Figure out a 60-second edit. Figure out a 30-second edit. It's good that it already exists. If you send it, think about how you might chop it up into commercial bite sizes, you know?
Right.
Because that just makes the person on our end receiving it at any agency, there's more value to that rather than, you know, having to think about how you would cut it up, take the initiative and edit a 60-second or a 30-second version. Wouldn't hurt.
That's true, because you know your music best if you're that person.
Yes.
And, you know, okay, a licensable track, not a production library track, but a song is a song. Mm-hmm. So that sort of exists on its own. And you make of it what you will.
Right.
But if you're a composer and you really want to get music into advertising, you've got to look at the way that the advertising world works. And you've got to cater to that because it will give you an edge.
Mm-hmm.
Other thing that I wanted to ask you is, how do you feel about, you know, obviously on the label and publishing side, you know, people are representing the music that they control. But if you're looking at independence, what's the case from your perspective of they're going DIY versus they're working with a sync rep aligned with their kind of music and their vision?
DIY is harder to shop in an environment like this.
Right.
It's very difficult to break through to the person who, like myself or any of the other producers, creatives in the building.
Right.
Because of the amount of solicitations we get.
Right.
If it's coming from a sync company, probably we'll have a little better luck.
Right.
Because also we don't, you know, when there's a sync company attached to it, we assume that everything's been vetted.
That's
and all
very,
that.
Very important point.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, if I'm getting something from anybody, from an individual, I don't know if you have samples in there that haven't been cleared or paid for. It's a little too risky for us. And, you know, basically it opens us up to a lot of legal difficulties if we take those kinds of things. Because, again, if we get a track from someone and we listen to it, we say, well, you know, it's not something we would ever use. But for some reason, something sounds like what that track on something we might do in the future, it opens us up to liability. Because, you know, I listen to it or someone here listened to it and someone could say, hey, you know, that groove is the same kind of thing that I sent you a year ago. And it's like, could be totally coincidental. So it's really best that we don't even take those kinds of things. It's better coming from a company because it's a little bit more vetted and there's, you know, more of a relationship, hopefully.
Right. And I think that's really important for people to realize is that, you know, there's a real serious concern about liability.
Mm-hmm.
You might have something where you have a song that's really great, a chic guitar in it, and it sounds like something Nile Rodgers did a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
If it gets through the gate and it's in a big commercial, he will hear it.
Oh,
and
sure.
He will call his lawyer. Mm-hmm. And there will be repercussions for the agency.
Yeah.
Well, because the brand is going to say, what did you do?
Right. Well, you have to be careful because somebody take Nile Rodgers and that guitar sound of his.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't you can't copyright that, but that's an ownable sound for Nile.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's the thing.
Right.
Certain people are associated with a sound. We found that out about Marvin Gaye with the Blurred Lines thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that Nile Rodgers sound can be something he can claim is his own.
Yep.
So you have to be careful on so many levels now. Not just the musicological thing.
Right.
You know, but the sound-alike things. It's,
yeah.
It's very, you really have to be aware of all of that these days.
I mean, you know, it's sort of a question for me. You know, when you're talking about sound-alikes, there's the actual re-records. And re-records, it's like, okay, well, there's the, you know, the publishing is getting paid and everybody's on board. But then there's people who are like, okay, let's fudge the budget a little bit. You know, maybe we can get something. And I heard something that I thought to myself, gosh, it was in a Target commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded exactly like the riff from Back in Black, except they changed a couple of chords.
Right.
And I was like, somebody's going to get sued. How did they let this out? And
yeah
I don't know what the, I'm going to have to research that sometime.
Yeah.
But wow.
Sometimes you can get them passed, and sometimes people will call you out on it. Like, you know, the Black Keys, you know, they will call you out on it. You know, they have in recent time too. So it's a very litigious environment too. So people are very conscious about copyright infringement and sound alike issues. So you really have to be. That's another part of our job,
right?
Is to sort of be the policeman of all that too.
Yeah.
To put the brakes on things and say you're definitely approaching an area that we're not comfortable with, and that could be a very dangerous zone to start moving in. So let's go back a little bit and re-examine where we are, that
right.
kind of thing. And if we have to employ a musicologist to give us an opinion about, you know, if we're approaching dangerous territory, we do that as well.
Right.
But we're the first line of defense. The music producers here, and probably any agencies, are the first line of defense against that. We're supposed to raise our hand early in the process if we think that something is not going to be kosher.
And I think you guys probably can weed out at least 95% of things immediately.
Yeah.
You know, because you just know.
Yes. Yeah. I like to think that we never let it get that far.
Right.
So.
And I think that this is, going back to the audience, if you're a creator, if you're an owner, you know, okay, going back to the, first of all, the sync reps.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing about being aligned with the sync rep, and I'm not going to make this a commercial for sync reps, but one point I'll say is that if you're working with somebody who's representing you, generally they have insurance.
Yeah.
Generally, it's their company on the line if there's a problem, and their relationship on the line.
Yes.
If there's a problem. So they're going to really work to make sure that what you're doing and what you're presenting is super legit.
Yes. It's in the sync company's best interest to make sure that everything is taken care of on that level, because, you know, should a problem arise, that's going to be a difficulty for them on the business side of things. So, yeah, I would think that it would be in their best interest to make sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed.
Right.
So.
And that's a big reason to work with a sync agent if you're a creator or somebody licensing your music. And number two, I think the good news out of all of this is that, you know, really, if your music is really good quality, you don't need to make something that has something so similar, like, you know, that sort of like signature, like Prince Lindrum, or, you know, the Nile Rodgers guitar that we talked about, whatever it is, you can stand on your own creativity and you can get work.
Right. I mean, you can do things that are in the style of.
Of course.
And I think you would have to do that because you're going to have to sort of compile a library of your own work to sort of match what the trends are.
Yeah.
So if you don't do that, then you're missing the market, let's say. But there's you know, copyright infringement issues that you have to be very aware of. In the style of doesn't mean copying things note for note. So that's something you really have to be aware of.
It's a bit of an interesting process and a judgment call. And I would say that if you really want to do it right, you know, a sync agent or just an agent in general can be a good partner, because they need to know where those lines are.
Yes.
You know, that shouldn't be crossed. And it's kind of weird to say that you could bring somebody like that into your creative process, but when you're talking about this part of the world, you should think about it. If you're going in that direction.
Absolutely.
Let's break away from the sort of process stuff that we've been talking about and talk about something else.
Okay.
One of the things that I've said to people over and over again, and I believe in it strongly, is that sync in a lot of ways is becoming what radio used to be. And there's a lot of examples I can point to on this podcast. I did an interview with Steve Smith from Dirty Vegas, and we talked about what happened with them and Mitsubishi and how they went to winning Grammys and selling 77,000 downloads a week in 2002 from really being studio musicians.
Amazing.
And they're not an isolated story by any means.
No.
So, you know, one of the things that I like to talk about is the potential for a sync or a composition provide a lift and provide awareness. And I personally think nothing does that better than having a song in an ad.
Yeah, nowadays, absolutely. Your earlier mention about sync being the new radio, it is in a lot of ways. I mean, between ads and television shows and movies, it is an incredibly effective way to get your music out there.
Right.
And heard and replayed. I mean, the great thing about an ad is the frequency.
Right.
Where TV shows are great because you may get one audience, a larger audience all at one time
exactly.
to view that episode. Same with a movie. But the potential with advertising is the frequency of it all. You can
right.
just, because it'll, you know, based on the media buy, it could run numerous, numerous times. And so that piece of music may get heard more often rather than one time with a larger audience.
Right.
That's a really big plus for a band or an artist to have it in an ad, because it's just going to churn out a little bit more, and that's a really helpful thing, because I think frequency is really an important thing.
It's so true. Being able to really drill it into people's mm-hmm. heads,
yeah.
you know, it's like you can have something that is a great creative use of a song,
mm-hmm.
and 150 million people will see it
mm-hmm. once,
and then after that there'll be some distribution internationally,
mm-hmm.
maybe some syndication, there'll be some online viewing,
mm-hmm.
but it basically, if you look at a graph, it starts at the
yeah.
top and then it drops about 85%.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then sort of trails off.
Right.
Whereas you have a commercial, it's peaks and spikes.
Yeah. The only thing about commercials these days, as you know, different from when I was growing up, that's when I was much younger, is that the length that a commercial airs on television anyway is much less.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day, I remember seeing when I was much younger, a single commercial could run for a year or two. Now they're interchangeable. Something will run for 3 months. It'll be taken off the air. Something else will replace it, and the length now is a lot shorter than it used to be.
Yeah.
It'll still get the amount of pops in a 6 month or a 3 month period, but it won't last. It's the shelf life is not a year or two or three like it used to be. That was a regularity that doesn't happen a lot now. But the flip side is we also didn't have the internet.
Right.
So now you can find that commercial and watch it as many times as you want for a very long time. Obviously, if it's a sync, there's a time limit to that.
Right.
If it's original music creation, it could stay up there forever.
Right.
Because the client, if they do it as a work for hire, they own it and it could live up there forever. So if you can get people to continually go there and check it out and view it, it could be never ending. So that's the flip side of things.
Yeah, and that's something that I think is really interesting to bring up, because I think that the internet and also mobile give
yes.
people who, and this is really where the promotional really comes into play, the mm-hmm. promotional aspect of for the music, is that, you know, everybody has a smartphone. Everybody can Shazam something.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you instantly know what the song is. And then you have the ability to also instantly engage with it.
Yes.
Whether that means, you know, getting to know more about the band,
mm-hmm.
reading up about them, going to their official mobile site,
mm-hmm.
going to look at their tickets, downloads, whatever it is,
yeah.
social sharing. You can do all of that in a way you never could.
Mm-hmm.
And on the internet, you have services like TuneFind for television.
Yes.
And it's a little bit more diverse for advertising, but there's several sites for that as well where you can go and you can find what song and then actions that you can
yeah.
take to engage with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you never had. I remember going back to a few years ago when we were both younger, if I heard a song that I liked in a commercial
mm-hmm.
and I didn't instantly know who it was, I mean, I really had to go research.
Yes. Yeah.
I absolutely. Had to go ask people. You know, I would get down to the point, you know, because it's just my nature,
mm-hmm.
where I would find out what the agency was and call somebody
mm-hmm.
and ask them, what is that song that you're using? Who's
yep.
that artist? Because that was the only way you would get it.
Yes. It's way easier now.
Yeah.
It's way easier now. Yes. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, technology, the internet, and all of these great sites are available where you can find it out. I mean, even to the real basic thing is, like, if we put an ad up on YouTube, people will, you know, will comment, wow, who was that? You know, what's that song? Where did it come? And then other people will respond, it's so-and-so, and it was off this, you know, CD, and other people will know. So, like, they'll have done the research, or they knew the band already, and they'll be able to answer the questions, you know. So it's really interesting. It's really, really interesting.
And if you're an artist and you want to take advantage of that,
mm-hmm.
the best thing that you can do is to be proactive. If there is something that's going on with your music, no matter where it is, that touches a potential fan
mm-hmm.
through advertising, television, film, video game, whatever it is, make sure that you are connecting that to the rest of what you're doing. And, you know, I'm talking as if it's just individual artists that need to learn this lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But I see time and time again, big labels, big
yeah.
publishers,
mm-hmm.
who just, they get syncs.
Yeah.
And they don't do anything with it. And it's like, isn't your job to market the band?
You would think.
And
yes.
You're not advantage. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, when I think about managers, they're a little bit more hip to this. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, when I speak to a manager, I speak to fairly major ones regularly, and they're all in their minds, mm-hmm. like, not just thinking about the paycheck that Sync's going to bring, because of course they're thinking about that.
Yes.
But what they're really thinking about is like, oh man, if I can get it in that brand, I'm gonna have like a $60 million budget behind me.
Yeah.
That's what the key is here.
Absolutely.
And that's what's at stake, you know, mm-hmm. and it may not be that you're gonna be, you know, you're gonna have a song for 6 months that's in a $60 million budget. It may be 3 months in something that has a budget of $3 million, but still, that's an amazing amount of exposure over and over again.
Absolutely.
No matter how low, mm-hmm. you know, or high the actual budget is.
I remember two or three Christmas seasons ago, Vampire Weekend had mm-hmm. Holiday in three different commercials at the same time, in different categories, but that song was being used at the same time on three different brands at once. And
wow.
I was amazed that, you know, that obviously, you know, when you make a call to license, you know, they usually tell you if it's being used on something else. And apparently no one cared. It was like, well, this is a perfect song. We want to use it, even though it's being used. It's in a different category than what we are. And we don't care.
And at the end of the day, you know, certainly the artist is benefiting from all
Absolutely,
three of those.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a boost of sales that wasn't there before at all.
No. It was very interesting to me. You see that every once in a while, that one song is being used at the same time for different brands in different categories. So I think there was a Flo Rida one as well that had a couple, at least two at one time. So,
and you do see that from time to time, mm-hmm. and you know it's usually different genres, mm-hmm. different types of brands. Like you'll have a travel brand and a car
mm-hmm.
brand,
yes. mm-hmm.
or you know you'll have a food brand, and you'll have you know an insurance brand.
Mm-hmm.
And if it works, it works. That's the bottom line.
The question that still arises in conversations that I have with various people in the industry is, who benefits more, brand or the band?
Right.
And that's still a jump ball.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everyone understands that the bands do benefit a lot.
Right.
But I do think the question is, are the brands benefiting as much?
Right.
On a longer term look, the bands obviously get the exposure.
Right.
They get the sync fees.
Right.
They get, you know, they wind up usually getting more sales.
Yeah.
More streams these days.
And possibly they end up getting endorsement and sponsorship from the brand if it goes well.
Yes. Is the equity that the brand is getting equal to that? I don't know if they've determined that yet. I don't know if they've really been able to quantify that yet.
It's a really interesting question. And you know, when I've talked to people who are on the brand side at labels, mm-hmm. you know, the conversation is like, okay, well, we have to look at the artist and basically ask the artist, mm-hmm. as simple as this, like, what do you use? What do you like?
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of try to build it from there.
Okay.
And it seems like a good organic process.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other side, just because an artist likes a brand doesn't mean that their message and their image mm-hmm. are going to resonate with that brand's audience.
That's
now,
right.
One example I can give you, and these guys don't advertise very much, but you know their brand has been damaged mm-hmm. by the people who are in the music industry who like their brand.
Mm-hmm.
Hermes. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I'll bring up Hermes. There are a lot of people who like their brand,
mm-hmm.
who they may not want it directly associated with. Like
they're
Birkin bags.
Yes.
You know, they may not want the Kardashian to be walking around with their bags and representing their brand.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
And that's just an example that comes from off the top of my head. But mm-hmm. it's like, you know, you're not gonna have Rihanna representing Gerber, even if she might like it at some date.
Right.
They'll never have her.
No.
You know, as a spokesperson, and that's no diss on Rihanna because I love her, but
no,
you know,
no. No, she's actually, she actually is working with Puma with us.
Right,
so she's
does great with
yeah.
Puma.
Mm-hmm. She does, and that brand fits her style.
Right.
For sure. It just depends. That's why I think you really have to give a lot of thought about the song and the band you're aligning with and the artist. If it's a bigger thing, like Rihanna for Puma is designing a lot of their sportswear for
right,
women.
Right.
And she's very involved creatively with the brand. So they've invested in her. And I do believe it's paying back for them very well.
I was going to say, in that case, it's an obvious win for
mm-hmm.
both parties.
Yes.
Because, you know, when you look at it, it's not only a brand that you know that she uses.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. that she's going to wear Puma. It's not just a mm-hmm. thing where it's like, okay, they're going to give me a paycheck and
mm-hmm.
I'll put a couple of songs into it or
right.
I'll write a song or I'll do a verse, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like some little sort of surface level
yeah.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She's been integrated not only into the brand messaging,
mm-hmm.
but into the actual product itself.
Absolutely, yes.
And that's not happening in every instance.
There's a great synergy between her and that brand. That
right.
works. That works.
Yeah.
That's why I think you have to give a lot of thought about who you're going to align with, and even what song you're going to use. Like I always go back to the Cadillac Led Zeppelin thing.
Yeah.
That worked.
Yeah.
Now that was just a straight license or whatever, but that. For the demographic that they were going after, and you know the band being an iconic legendary band, that song being a very iconic song, that association worked, and they ran it a long time.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just 3 weeks, 4 weeks, or whatever. They really invested a lot of money in that song, and it became something that provided them a lot of equity.
Right.
It really, really did. Now they've moved on since then, but it was a very good use of a song and of a band when they were sort of reinventing themselves, when Cadillac was
right.
reinventing themselves. So that was a good move. That was a good move. They paid for it, but it was a good move.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be cheap to work with Led Zeppelin's
no.
music, and to get them to do a sync for a commercial, you know, that's a little bit of negotiation.
I'm sure they're very selective about who they want to partner up with. Yeah.
Exactly. But now on the brand side,
mm-hmm.
forget about Led Zeppelin. Now on the brand side,
I always like to talk about Led Zeppelin.
Oh no, I love Led Zeppelin. I'm just saying, okay, so they're selective, right? That's for sure. But in terms of the brands being selected, when brands are looking at music, and I'm not talking about, okay, we need to have a bed, that's just a basic bed. When they're looking at something that's sort of strategic, how much research do they actually do? And is that something that you guys do in tandem with them?
Research on the artist, the song?
Research on the artist and the song, and, in terms of hitting their demographic, in terms of resonating, is there anything that goes into that, or is that more the exception rather than the rule?
That's the exception.
That's what I figured, yeah.
That's the exception. I think they usually go with either their guts.
Right.
Or they rely on a very, very basic level of focus group testing,
mm-hmm.
along with the larger idea. It's unusual that they'll test a song or an artist. They'll test the entire concept with the song, with the music piece in there as well. And they may get some specific comments regarding the music, but it's a whole concept test rather than just a music test.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. So
I know there are companies that do that. They will test just the music.
Right.
And give you a full breakdown of what you, that's almost like a music cue score kind of thing.
Right.
There are companies that do that.
I mean there are some consumer brands where they have, in-house.
No, they might.
And we can say who they are, but I'm not going to give them the publicity. But, major consumer brands, soft drinks,
mm-hmm.
Fashion lines,
yeah.
whatever,
yeah.
they think about this before they talk to you.
Right.
We did a couple of focus groups, and we came up like this. These sorts of
mm-hmm.
people work for us. So what do you guys think?
Yes. Yeah. I think there's a, I used to work on a major soft drink account at another
mm-hmm.
agency. And a lot of the times, either the music celebrity who was going to be in the commercial or the song, I think it was already determined on their end.
Right.
And they would come to the agency and say, okay, here's who we've partnered with, artist, song, or what have you. Now you need to integrate this into what we're, what we're trying to do for this.
Right.
This campaign, let's say. So.
But that's really the exception. It's really
yeah,
not
Yeah, I don't
the
think
rule.
That happens
yeah.
a lot. I think, it's few and far between.
Yeah, and you pretty much know who those brands are already that do it. It's
yes.
not that many of them.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask you a couple of closing questions.
Mm-hmm.
The first question is, and this is really, I think, one of the most important questions for the audience out there,
mm-hmm.
is like, what are the most important things for you, not in terms of what we've talked about in terms of process, in terms of creative? What are the most important things for you in terms of your agency and your job and how music works within that? Like, how do people help you and the agency to look good to your clients?
But people from what
I would say, anybody who's a label, publisher, okay, a artist, producer, it doesn't really matter. Anybody who's bringing you music.
I think, well, you know, what we love is one stop when it comes to syncs.
Okay.
I mean, as easy as you can make the clearance part of it, whether it's one stop or not, I just say that because that is ultimately the easiest thing.
Of course. Of course.
But as easy as you can make the clearances, because a lot of times we're chasing down clearances to get in. You know, our time frames are getting shorter.
Right.
To get stuff out.
Right.
Where, you know, the timetables of, you know, from concept to creating and shipping it out the door for air are just getting tighter and tighter and tighter. So when we're trying to license something, the easiest route to get all the approvals, it makes our life so much easier. You know, sometimes there are, you know, times we have to get to 8 different writers,
right,
on a track, and sometimes 2 or 3 of those people are not the easiest to locate.
Right. Or alive.
Yes. Or alive. So I think the faster you someone can get the clearances together, to, you know, that we can facilitate this thing faster, with more ease from the label side, from the publisher side, or artist side, it's just, it makes our lives a whole lot easier. That would be, I think, the biggest thing. Just making that's much more streamlined and have all those in whatever way possible ready to go a lot sooner and easier in the process.
And that's why I say to people, you know, you need to have a sync rep if you're independent.
Yeah.
Because you should be focusing on your art. You shouldn't be focusing on trying to make sure that your stuff is airtight. You should be working with somebody to help you to do that.
Yeah, I really believe that some people do have, you know, the creative portion
Absolutely.
Of their brain and the business portion of their brain, but I really think to be effective in this, you have to sort of take one or the other.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a creative person, make great music.
Right.
And find somebody who can help you market that music.
Yeah.
It's hard to do both.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do both.
Absolutely. I think that's about it. Thank you very much for being on the podcast.
You're very
greatly
welcome.
Appreciate it.
This was a great, great discussion. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, everybody. That was Paul Greco from J. Walter Thompson.